For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
Thank you, Richard Cotton. This week, we're going to look at a part of 20th century American history that has been censored from our history books by America's enemies. An outstanding figure in the story of modern America and central to the struggle of American patriots to take our country back was the great industrialist and humanitarian Henry Ford Sr. Ford was born in 1863, a farm boy from rural Michigan who loved to do mechanical work with his hands and experiment with new ideas in his shop. He was a deeply moral man to whom honesty, work, and sobriety were sacred concepts. And he was a gentle man in the true sense of the word, who, in the words of writer Albert Lee, quote, shared a love of all living things with naturalist John Burroughs, and who shared campfires with his friend Thomas Edison. Ford was known to nail up a door for a whole season rather than disturb a robin's nest. And he postponed a hay harvest because ground birds were brooding in the field. He was a man of peace, saying that he would give his entire fortune if he could shorten World War I by a single day. Close quote. Marxists hate Henry Ford, but most of the workers in his factories loved and revered him. In fact, it would not be an exaggeration to say that when Henry Ford began his seven-year-long $5 million lesson to the American people in 1920, he was probably the best-loved living American. He did not invent the automobile, but he was one of its pioneers. His inborn genius for innovation and efficiency enabled him to produce the first car for the common man, the Model T. Before Ford, cars were mostly playthings of the wealthy. The Model T began its production run in 1908 and was not replaced until 1927. As Ford increased the efficiencies of his plants, instead of simply pocketing the profits, he constantly lowered the price, which ultimately fell from $590 to $260. And he astounded the world in 1914 when he ordered the minimum wage paid to even the lowliest Ford employee to be raised to $5 per day, at a time when the average wage to the skilled workers of his competitors was far less than half that amount. He began one of the first profit-sharing plans, distributing $12 million to his employees in the first year alone. He caused jaws to drop again when, believing that useful knowledge should be used for the benefit of the people, he gave up millions by making all Ford patents free to everyone. And he led a successful one-man crusade against the so-called Selden patent, benefiting his competitors as much as he. Now, Henry Ford is well known. In fact, a recent series of Ford Motor Company TV advertisements even features his face and quotes some of his statements as words to live by. So why am I speaking of him on this program, which is usually devoted to the hidden aspects of politics and history? Because what is not so well known today is that Henry Ford devoted years of his life and a substantial part of his fortune to awakening the American people to the enemies of our nation. You see, the movement to free America from internationalist domination did not begin with the Chuck Harders and Tom Valentines or other Johnny-come-latelys. It certainly didn't begin with me either, though I think it is becoming clearer with every passing day that American Dissident Voices alone dares to tell our listeners the whole truth about our nation's plight. In 1916, Ford led an ill-fated mission to stop the slaughter of World War I. He assembled a disparate collection of clergymen, writers, politicians, pacifists, and businessmen, chartered the Norwegian ocean liner Oscar II, and sailed for Europe in hopes of inspiring the neutral powers to mediate a peace treaty. He called this his peace ship. His coalition squabbled among themselves, and the forces for war proved too strong. Ford returned to America a somewhat discouraged but wiser man. He never lost his distaste for foreign wars, however, and spoke out against them and the hidden forces that foment them in no uncertain terms. Madame Rosika Schwimmer, one of the leaders of the peace ship project, was a Jewish diplomat and a pacifist who, according to Ford, was more intelligent than all of the others aboard the ship put together. She tells the story of her first meeting with Ford, where he said, quote, "I know who started this war, the German Jewish bankers," close quote. As he slapped some papers hidden in a pocket of his coat, he said, quote, "I have the evidence here, facts. I can't give them out yet because I haven't got them all, but I'll have them soon," close quote. In an interview with a New York Times reporter on Christmas 1921, Ford gave some further insight into his education in the ways of the world while he was on the peace ship. Quote, "It was the Jews themselves who convinced me of the direct relationship between the international Jew and war. In fact, they went out of their way to convince me. On the peace ship were two very prominent Jews. We had not been at sea 200 miles before they began telling me of the power of the Jewish race, of how they controlled the world through their control of gold, and that the Jew and no one but the Jew could end the war. I was reluctant to believe it, but they went into detail to convince me of the means by which the Jews controlled the war, how they had the money, how they had cornered all the basic materials needed to fight the war and all that. And they talked so long and so well that they convinced me. They said and they believed that the Jews started the war, that they would continue it as long as they wished, and that until the Jew stopped the war, it could not be stopped. I was so disgusted that I would have liked to turn the ship back," close quote. Ford had become convinced that there was an organized, dangerous, largely secret, and incredibly powerful menace to America, almost completely Jewish at its highest levels, and he was determined to do something about it. He earnestly believed that if this menace was exposed to the light of day, that responsible and moral Jews would cast out this cancerous group from their midst. He was honestly surprised by the abuse he received from most of his Jewish friends and business associates after this educational work had begun. And we may be amazed by the fact that a few of his Jewish friends remained cordial. Henry Ford believed that if the kept press would not tell the truth on what he termed the Jewish question, then it was his duty to his God and his country to do it himself. He purchased what was at the time a small weekly newspaper in his hometown in Michigan, the Dearborn Independent, and turned it into his national voice with nationwide distribution. His espousal of traditional values, combined with a practical populism, struck a chord with many Americans, for soon the sleepy weekly had turned into an influential giant, with a circulation at one point of nearly 500,000. Ford lost money on the paper, selling it for 5 cents per copy or $1 per year. When Jewish censorship kept it off the newsstands in some cities, he made it available through the local Ford agencies. He neither solicited nor accepted advertising. He would not have the paper subject to Jewish or any other outside influence. The masthead meant what it said. Independent. He gathered around him some of the most talented writers and researchers in the business, virtually cleaning out the editorial staff of the largest newspaper in the state, the Detroit News. He hired the best private investigators. He employed the services of patriotic congressmen and diplomats. He dispatched his agents to foreign countries to dig up the facts. 1920 marked the beginning of the publication in serial form of Henry Ford's research series in the Dearborn Independent. Each week, the paper carried a major story exposing an aspect of Jewish power and influence. One of the men Ford had hired away from the Detroit News, who would eventually become the head of the Independent, was the brilliant editor and columnist William J. Cameron. Cameron at first protested bitterly at the subject matter of the articles on the Jewish question and almost bolted with a few other staffers who didn't want to touch this forbidden subject. But as the evidence began to pile up, he became convinced that Ford was right. He was the author of most of the Independent's articles in this series, and he stayed with Ford for the next 20 years. These articles would eventually be collected in book form under the title The International Jew. The articles were a sensation, and the book became a nationwide success. In fact, one of the greatest bestsellers of all time. While Ford's educational series on Jewish power was running in the paper, The Independent had a circulation of between 250,000 and 500,000 copies per week. When the articles were reprinted in book form, eventually to fill 4 volumes, it was not unusual for each press run, of which there were many for each volume, to total over 200,000 copies. It is estimated that more than 10 million copies of the book were sold in the United States alone. The International Jew was translated into 16 languages, including Arabic, and was distributed by the millions in Europe, South America, and the Middle East. Each of the 4 volumes was a full-sized book of about 250 pages and was sold for a mere 25 cents. Ford lost nearly $5 million on this venture, and that doesn't count the losses to his business due to several Jewish boycotts and lawsuits. To evaluate the tenor of Ford's lessons to the American people, let's take a look at a few passages from his preface to the first volume. Quote, "Why discuss the Jewish question? Because it is here, and because its emergence into American thought should contribute to its solution, and not to a continuance of those bad conditions which surround the question in other countries. The Jewish question has existed in the United States for a long time. Jews themselves have known this, even if Gentiles have not. There have been periods in our own country when it has broken forth with a sullen sort of strength, which presaged darker things to come. Many signs portend that it is approaching an acute stage. Not only does the Jewish question touch those matters that are of common knowledge, such as financial and commercial control, usurpation of political power, monopoly of necessities, and autocratic direction of the very news that the American people read, but it reaches into cultural regions and so touches the very heart of American life. It is interwoven with much of the menace of organized and calculated disorder which troubles the nations today. It is not of recent growth, but its roots go deep. The motive of this work is simply a desire to make facts known to the people. Other motives have, of course, been ascribed to it. But the motive of prejudice or any form of antagonism is hardly strong enough to support such an investigation as this. Moreover, had an unworthy motive existed, some sign of it would inevitably appear in the work itself. We confidently call the reader to witness that the tone of these articles is all that it should be. The international Jew and his satellites, as the conscious enemies of all that Anglo-Saxons mean by civilization, are not spared. Nor is that unthinking mass which defends anything that a Jew does, simply because it has been taught to believe that what Jewish leaders do is Jewish. Neither do these articles proceed upon a false emotion of brotherhood and apology, as if this stream of doubtful tendency in the world were only accidentally Jewish. We give the facts as we find them. That of itself is sufficient protection against prejudice or passion. Close quote. A few of the article's titles should give you an idea of the information in this book. Jewish History in the United States. Does a definite Jewish program exist? The historic basis of Jewish imperialism. Does Jewish power control the world press? The all-Jewish mark on Red Russia. Jewish testimony in favor of Bolshevism. How Jews in the U.S. conceal their strength. Jewish control of the American theater. Jewish supremacy in the motion picture world. Jewish rights clash with American rights. Jewish degradation of American baseball. Jewish jazz becomes our national music. Jewish hotbeds of Bolshevism in the U.S. Dr. Levy, a Jew, admits his people's error. The gigantic Jewish liquor trust and its career. The Jews' complaint against Americanism. The gentle art of changing Jewish names. And dozens of others, a total of 80 articles in all. Now, neither the International Jew nor Henry Ford were perfect. Ford and Cameron reflected the prejudices of their times when they took irrelevant stabs at Darwin and Nietzsche. They were sometimes too eager to accept quotes and documents from dubious sources when much stronger documentation on the same points was already available. And when tremendous financial pressure was brought to bear, and when a mysterious automobile accident sent Ford to the hospital, nearly missing killing him, he did cave in to the pressure and directed one of his subordinates to sign a phony apology written for that exact purpose by prominent Jewish attorney Louis Marshall. His post-apology actions indicate that Ford had not altered his opinions, however. Despite its few flaws, though, this book is a magnificent piece of work, a priceless distillation of many thousands of man-hours of expensive research and compilation, a magnifying glass applied to the hidden sources of immorality, vice, degeneracy, and subversion. The International Jew was available in libraries and bookstores across America. As I've already pointed out, it was one of the biggest bestsellers of all time. Henry Ford felt that this book was so important that at one point a copy was presented to all purchasers of new Ford automobiles. Yet today, this book is almost impossible to find. You will not be able to buy it in your local bookstore. You will not be able to check it out at your local library. If it were not for a few courageous Americans keeping it in print and available to you, you would not be able to find it at all. The truth is that here in so-called democratic, pluralist America, this book has been nakedly suppressed. What are they afraid of? Is it because this book is a hate-filled, anti-Jewish polemic? No, not at all. The book's tone is not at all anti-Jewish, and again it appeals to the reason and moral sense of its Jewish readers to put a stop to the abuses of their leaders. It is scrupulously fair, even-handed, and factual. It is because of its extensive documentation and the unassailable facts which it presents that it has been suppressed. For the International Jew is a threat. It's a threat to those men of money and power who would put a sack over our heads and force us unknowingly and unwillingly into their new world order. A new world order that they have been preparing for us for decades. This book is a threat to those who would take away our weapons of self-defense and who would take away our freedom and our children's future. No other patriotic radio program dares to offer its listeners this book because they know the incredible pressures that the guilty and the powerful will bring to bear upon them if they do. But American Dissident Voices is not an ordinary radio program. We hold our duty to bring the uncensored truth to our listeners as our highest obligation. We are proud to offer Henry Ford Sr.'s The International Jew as our radio offer number 16. This is more than a simple book. The International Jew is a four-volume set containing nearly 1,000 pages of insight and research. Volume 1 is The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem. Volume 2 is Jewish Activities in the United States. Volume 3 is Jewish Influences in American Life. And Volume 4 is Aspects of Jewish Power in the United States. All are photographically reproduced and are exactly as they were published by Henry Ford and his research staff at the Dearborn Independent. Henry Ford commissioned the best researchers available to get to the bottom of the mysteries of modern power politics. The result was this book in four volumes. Its insights into the roots of today's political situation are astounding and prophetic. To any who would hope to save our country and our people, the knowledge contained within its pages is invaluable. The International Jew is available to all who send a donation of $40 or more this week to keep this program on the air as our radio offer number 16. Remember, This is the complete four-volume set, exactly as commissioned and published by industrialist and patriot Henry Ford. Send as much as you can afford to support this program, a minimum of $40, to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. And don't forget to ask for radio offer number 16. Ladies and gentlemen, consider this. Henry Ford did not have to do what he did. He was the living incarnation of success. He was by far the richest industrialist of his day. He was loved and admired by millions. Among the common people, he was ranked with the greatest men of all time. Political power could have been his had he wanted it. But he did go forward with his investigation and explication of the Jewish question at the cost of a large portion of his wealth, at the cost of much of the time and energy of an aging man, and at the cost of the alienation of many friends, associates, and even family members. He well knew that he was potentially putting his life in peril by opposing these powerful moneyed interests. Henry Ford did this because he felt a higher duty, a duty that transcended all of those considerations. Henry Ford acted in obedience to a duty which we of our generation must rediscover if our children are to have a future. However discouraging the odds may seem at the moment, and no matter how easy it may be to slip back into our easy chair or into our accustomed work, we must discharge our duty. And our duty is this: wherever we find it, and whatever disguise it wears, whether a clerical collar or a professor's tweeds or the stylish tailored suits of the network's talking heads, we must oppose evil.
You have been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for a book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute two international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.